And welcome, henchmen, back to another action-packed episode of the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, brought to you by the Villains Man with myself, JVD, as I attempt to traverse the continuity of Marvel's most prolific martial artists in Iron Fist and Shang-Chi. If you want to keep up with podcasts, you can do so over on Twitter at Deadly Kung Fu Pod and Mastodon at Deadly Kung Fu Pod, or you can follow the Villains Man on social media and keep up with all the sharing of the podcast there. Now today, we're here in the final act of the Golden Dagger Saga and Master of Kung Fu. Before you start this, you should probably listen to the last three episodes, which are titled Parts 1, 2, 3. You should probably go listen to the Clock of Shattered Time before this, the Murder Agency, and then I would recommend going all the way back to, I think, episode 16 and listening to the Darter of Darkness episode where we meet Philo Su. And we start the war between her and Fu Manchu, which kind of takes place in this entire story. To kind of give an idea of what's leading up to all of this, and I've been saying this since I've started the story. It is excellent. It's really, really good storytelling if you love spy movies, James Bond. And if you like martial arts movies, you know, like Bruce Lee and Jet Li, this story really blends them all really, really well together. Now, I'm not going to take up too much time here because I've got a lot to discuss after these two issues. So we're covering the last two issues of the story. We're going to start off here with Master of Kung Fu number 50, titled The Dream Slayer. Your creative team, as always, Doug as the writer, Paul with pencils, you got Mike Esposito on inkers, Janice Cohen colorist, the letterist is John Costanza, and the editor is always Archie Goodwin. So, you know, you've got this core group outside of Paul Minch and Doug Lacey that's working on this title. And, you know, without them, Paul and Doug's story would not be so good. I mean, you know, everybody, when you write a comic book, you know, counts and it all matters because, you know, it's all one working unit. So I really should be thanking those guys, not just Doug and Paul. But the cover for this book is Dave Cockrum, which is all you need to know about the end of the story. It's a Shang-Chi doing something you don't ever see him doing. He's got a gun, and he has it pointed at Fu Manchu, and he's questioning if he can even shoot his father, who is attempting to push a button, and if you've been keeping up with this story, it's the Doomsday Button. Now, with the last couple of stories, they've all been told through everybody involved with MI6, and this story is told through the narrative of Fu Manchu. As Fu Manchu contemplates the present and future, he and Shaka Khan fly to the dark side of the moon where their rocket docks on a massive hidden space station. As they depart, they are unaware of their stowaways, Shang-Chi and Clive Reston, who take out some security guards. Unsure of where the Devil Doctor could be, they begin to search the station. On Earth, Dennis Nayland Smith finishes with his journal about the day's events as Ward Sarsfield enters his office. He informs his boss that Ducharme has either been abducted or defected back to Fu Manchu. Smith realizes it's the latter, and he has been played as her arrival and disappearance explains how their mission fell apart. Now, he can only hope Shang-Chi and Clive Reston can stop Fu Manchu's master plan. Back on the space station, Ducharme brings her master his elixir of immortality, as Shaka Khan prepares for a nutrient bath to help sustain his resurrection. Meanwhile, Shang-Chi and Reston discover the master controls for the station. The agent informs of a plan to sabotage a control panel as he orders a master of Kung Fu to hunt down his father. He agrees with the plan, but hesitates, stating he's worried about Black Jack Tar and Liko Wu. Fu Manchu leaves Ducharme in his garden and goes to check on Shaka Khan. Lost in his contemplation, Shang-Chi manages to sneak up on his father and puts his sword to his throat. He tells Fu Manchu that he is here to stop him, but the villain asks his son to consider seeing the work he has done. Unknown to our hero, it's all meant to stall him as Fu Manchu secretly presses an intercom button so Shaka Khan can hear the conversation. Disregarding the henchman's pleas to reconsider and take his nutrient bath, the ancient warlord storms to his father's side to right the failure to kill his brother. Finished with hearing his father's reasoning, Shang-Chi raises his sword to strike and hesitates. Fu Manchu mocks him and drops his guard, allowing Reston to catch him at gunpoint. Before he can fire, Shaka Khan enters and is fired upon instead. Faster than the human eye, he slices the bullet and then runs his sword through Reston. Shang-Chi leaps in to attack Shaka Khan, allowing Fu Manchu to flee to set off the nuclear warheads. With a swipe of his sword, our hero unmasks his brother to discover to his horror that they could pass as identical twins. As his face rapidly deteriorates due to needing the nutrient bath, Shaka Khan hastily attacks Shang-Chi, knowing his own death is imminent. With his hand around Shang-Chi's throat, Shaka Khan goes for the killing stroke, But in a desperate plea to break free, the master of Kung Fu cuts his brother's arm off and kicks him to the floor. Before Shaka Khan can guard himself, Shang-Chi takes off his head with one swipe. Our hero chases his father to the control room and confronts him. Fu Manchu waits for his son to arrive with his finger ready to push the button for the nukes. Shang-Chi tries to reason with him and talks him out of it, but the devil doctor refuses to do so, claiming he has lived too long and achieved so much that he has nothing in his life to live for but this. Caught in his moment of self-reflection, Clive Reston throws Shang-Chi his pistol and begs him to shoot his father. Fu Manchu goes to activate the nukes, and to his surprise, Shang-Chi doesn't hesitate and fires the pistol. Despite his shock and pain, the villain activates the controls, which electrocute him due to Reston's tinkering. With what remains of his strength, Fu Manchu plays his last trump card, sealing off the control panel, which was housed in an escape shuttle that breaks away from the space station. Both Shang-Chi and an injured Reston watch the shuttle fly into the darkness of space, believing that being out on his own with no one to aid him, the wounded Fu Manchu will die. Moving on to Master of Kung Fu number 51, the epilogue for the Golden Daggers titled Brass and Blackness, a Death Move. The writers for this book is Doug Minch, pencilers is Jim Craig, the inker is Pablo Marcos, the colorist is David Wardfield, the letterers go to Denise Wall and Ivory Watanabe, and the editor, as usual, is Archie Goodwin. The cover is done by none other than Paul Gulacy, which is cool because he did not draw this book. He did the cover, and it's a very, very excellent cover. It really sums up this entire story on one cover. Excellent book. Shang-Chi and Rustin have no time to reflect on Fu Manchu's shuttles vanishing in the blackness of space as Si-Fan rush into the room. Overwhelmed with emotion, the master of Kung Fu leaps into action, continuing to show no mercy as he and Rustin kill them all. Before they can be assaulted again, they find the escape pod, and by sheer luck, Rustin safely lands them in the waters outside of China. They make contact with MI6 and find out that if they have not stopped Fu Manchu's master plan, that all of China would have been nuked. As that disturbing revelation rattles Shang-Chi, both he and Reston are told that James Larner has died. 6 days later, the agent is buried. Li Kowu, being the only person Larner hated the most, is overwhelmed with sorrow, knowing that despite that fact, he sacrificed himself to save her. As everyone departs, Smith asks Shang-Chi to come to a meeting he has asked the others to attend at headquarters. Already aware of the meeting, he informs Smith that he'll be there. Before the meeting gets underway, Sir Dennis Nayland Smith calls in his receptionist. She brings in Shang-Chi, his cat, as he is told the Oriental Expediters bombed his flat while he was in Switzerland. The reunion is interrupted as Dr. Petrie arrives, which everyone silently questions, and it is obvious he is still suffering from his reconditioning after Fu Manchu's mind control. Smith then informs all of them of Britain and America's plan to nuke China if the mission to stop Fu Manchu had failed. With his enemy of 40 years dead, he admits to them that he has thought about retirement but has decided to carry on with hopes they will all still work for him. Seeing that there was some truth in Fu Manchu's word about how Western civilization are willing to destroy the world without a care, Shang-Chi has had enough. He tells Smith that he is no different from his father, that he would destroy everything just to kill one man. Shang-Chi continues, telling Smith that he has used everyone in this room to fight his battles for him, and now all he wants them to do is fight meaningless battles to occupy what's left of his meaningless life now that Fu Manchu is dead. And during that time, all he will do is answer to faceless superiors without thought. This angers Smith as he calls out Shang-Chi for being holier than thou, but admits to being obsessed with killing Fu Manchu. Before he continues, Oriental Expediter henchmen crash through the windows and open fire. Shang-Chi and MI6 quickly kill them, with only Smith's receptionist being injured. The pointless ambush leaves everyone baffled but gives Smith the opportunity to tell everyone that Shang-Chi is a fool for believing he and MI6 are no different than their enemies that just attacked them. Our hero counters his argument, saying that if they are not measured by enemies they opposed, then friends they embrace, then those enemies need to be known. He then informs Smith he is everything he opposes in the process of honor, but he also recognizes him as a noble man that he cannot oppose. That makes the head of MI6 both a friend and enemy to him, which means he is nothing but a memory he wishes to forget. In anger, Smith tells him he can't reject him because that would mean he is rejecting his past. As Shang-Chi exits the room, he informs Smith that he is not rejecting his past, but turning his face to the future and leaves. Li Kowu chases after him and Smith tries to stop her. She tells him she decided to quit while in the Arctic and leaves anyways. With his agency falling apart around him, Sir Dennis Nailsmith looks to Clive Reston, who informs him he is taking a leave of absence after what has happened. Cursing Reston as he leaves the room, Smith turns to Tar, telling him he appreciates his loyalty and is glad he has decided to stay. With his head hung low, Tar tells Smith that is not the case, as he now has a lot to think about. Defeated, Smith looks out the shattered window as his agents follow Shang-Chi out into the rain and leave MI6 headquarters. So, there is clearly a lot to digest in these two issues that end the Golden Daggers. I've said it before in this episode, I've said it in the last couple episodes. You should be reading these stories if you love spy thrillers, if you love espionage, if you love that classic, James Bond stuff. If you love stuff that's, anything martial arts, in the 70s, these are great. These are perfect. I'm going to go ahead and take my break. I got a lot to discuss on the second half of this episode. And when we get back, I'm going to dive into the end of Golden Daggers.
Have you ever found yourself confused about the current state of the MCU or whatever the hell is happening with the DC universe?
Do you often have no idea what the hell the difference is between craft beer and that Bud Ice stuff at the gas station?
Well, then look no further.
We present to you Hops Geek News.
We're yet another geek and beer podcast in an already oversaturated market.
All right. We drink and we pretend we know things.
More often than not, we don't really know things, but we do talk some really great topics, and we most definitely can drink.
We'll deliver you news and then dive into any random topic you might have never knew you actually were passionate about.
With lots of fun facts about beer.
And from Marvel to DC and Star Wars, and to why Die Hard is most definitely a Christmas movie.
Which it is. Basically anything that our spouses are sick of hearing us talk about. Join us on YouTube or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
New episodes weekly. Just search Hops News.
And welcome back to the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, brought to you by the villains, man, myself, JVD, as I'm wrapping up the Golden Dagger saga here in Master of Kung Fu, Volume 1. It's an excellent story, and man, there's a lot to dive into that really is going to take place at the end of this part, so prepare yourself. So my only issue with really a lot of this story is the pacing here towards the end. Distances and how agents get there, there's no explanation to that, and I get that stuff you're supposed to read between the panels, but how it's happening so fast from, like, Shang-Chi getting to Switzerland, then the Arctic, and then while he's getting from Switzerland to the Arctic, you've got Reston and Clive and Blackjack Tar heading from, London straight to the Arctic with not a whole lot of explanation, and it kind of even gets even more out of control in this story right here, right? So, when Sarsfield warned Smith that, Desharme has defected, and Smith is not surprised by that, she is immediately already in space with Fu Manchu. Like, how did she do this? Did she have a rocket ship outside MI6 stashed somewhere? Did she fly to the Arctic and then get there? Because, pacing tells us that Fu Manchu, everything is taking place as soon as they get off the rocket due to the actions of Clive Reston and Shang-Chi, but she's immediately there. So, did she leave before that rocket departed? There's a lot of questioning there that needs to be answered, because all of a sudden, she's just there, instantly, and we know she was just at MI6 right before Tar left, when he was getting wired up with the microphone earlier in this story. So the pacing there just kind of blows my mind. And that's really the only one. And, okay, hold up. And now that I think about it, what makes this pacing even weird, because I'm assuming this all takes place in the same day, because, they even travel to space. And then Clive Reston and them even fall back to space in the shuttle. And I'm sure that doesn't take a lot of time, but that just goes to show you, how did she get there so fast, when we know that they came back to Earth at the end of this story? Pacing, really off. Needs a little bit of explanation of how people are getting from here to there. Teleportation would explain that, but there's never been teleportation at all in any of Master of Kung Fu since I've been reading it, and I'm reading these issues blind. That might come up in a later issue, who knows? So, None of the bad stuff there. Got that out of the way. Cool stuff right off the bat. When you open up issue 50, the opening book that's got all the credits and whatnot in it, we have this really cool image, and it's Shang-Chi and Shaka Khan, and they're getting ready to do battle on this bridge, and they're still at Fu Manchu's fortress, and there's a bridge underneath them, and all these Sieg fan guards are running up behind Shang-Chi. He's defeated some, he's knocked some off, and then the bridge below them, there's a bunch of them running. Well, as the two are squaring off, it's almost like the ceiling is this glass dome, and we see the moon in the background as it looks like a lot of something's erupted from the moon, like it's been destroyed by a bunch of nukes, like we're supposed to presume, and it's blowing up. But the moon is the face of Fu Manchu, and it's really, really cool. And it's one of these images I'll post on social media if I remember. Really cool. Now, we continue to see Shang-Chi be merciless in this book. He continues to carry the sword that he grabbed in fighting Shaka Khan, and he is putting it to good use against every C-Fan assassin that he sees. And even his willingness to kill to stop Fu Manchu goes beyond this, because when he fights Shaka Khan, he cuts off Shaka Khan's arm and then decapitates him. I'll talk a little bit more about that later when I really get into what Shaka Khan is here. And then he shoots his father, the master of martial arts, the master of kung fu, the deadly hands of kung fu, decides to use a gun. And only because he knows he can't get to Fu Manchu fast enough in some other way to stop him. And I was completely blown away that he shot him. A lot of times when you look at comics, the cover is very misleading, especially in older comics. And like I said, the issue to this has a gun in Shang-Chi's hands as he has it aimed at Fu Manchu. And I'm like, okay, that's not going to happen. And I was blown away that he shot Fu Manchu in this book. So, continues to kill. Afterwards, we don't know if that's going to happen when this story's over, but we do know as soon as Fu Manchu departs, he's back to killing C-Fan as they try to stop him and Clive Reston from leaving the ship. So he even goes so much to electrocute one of them with a cable, which is pretty freaking brutal. And I'm curious to see if, because, you know, he's been about pacifism this entire time, and he does not want to kill people. And he's even admitted that he hates the way MI6 does things, because they just shoot to kill and, you know, no second thoughts. And he doesn't like that. But now we see him being extremely ruthless. And I'm curious to see if that's going to continue on with the rest of Master of Kung Fu. Because this is issue 51. This series ends at 125 issues. So we still got roughly 54 issues of cover. Now, like I said in the last episode, it looks like Shang-Chi and Clive Reston has continued to squash their beef to work together, and, you know, kind of push Alico off to the side. And we see this when they come across the control panel, because Reston is pretty smart here. He knows that he can't stop Fu Manchu, but he knows his son can, because he's obviously more skilled. So, so this is where they split up. Now, what's even interesting here is Clive also knows that Fu Manchu could be stopped by Shang-Chi, but Shang-Chi can't do the important thing and kill Fu Manchu because he questions his father. Right there, you know, he is willing to even help Shang-Chi kill his father, so he don't have to be the guy to do that. So it looks like this beef squashed, and that upsets me because I really liked the beef over Liko Wu that Reston had with Shang-Chi, and I was hoping that that would continue later on. Now, the very important question that we got when we met Shaka Khan in these last two issues is, what exactly is he? Because we know that he was a skeleton that Fu Manchu assembled. And I had mentioned during the fight with Shang-Chi and Shaka Khan in those issues that there's a point that's drawn precisely so you can see the jawbone of Shaka Khan, almost like there's a skull underneath the mask. And we see these eyes, and they look like there's nothing to them. They're just eyes, and you can see everything around them within the mask. So almost like there's some type of necromancy going on there. So we've learned this already in the book, and I think maybe I've not even brought it up. But we do know that Shaka Khan is the ancestor of Fu Manchu, who created the Elixir Vital, or the Elixir of Immortality. And I'm assuming that part of this is what goes into these nutrient baths that Fu Manchu has created. So The nutrient baths, I'm kind of wondering exactly what they are, because what he is going to be put into by the Sea Fan, it kind of looks like a batha tank from Star Wars. So maybe that's where George Lucas got the idea for a batha tank, because this book does predate Star Wars. So I do believe Star Wars is like 77, 78, and this book is 76, I believe, so... and so, the whole nutrient bath thing, and I know I've seen these in other movies before, I just can't think of anything off the top of my head, but, and my thing is, we're talking about Resurrection, Rebirth of Fu Manchu, I would assume this is almost like a mother's womb with a child, because, you know, if you've ever been a parent, and you go to, you know, see your, baby doctor, whatnot, they always talk about the nutrients that's in the womb for a child. And that's kind of what I was gathering with this as I was reading about it. I just wish there was a little bit more to it, because there's not a lot to explain. But after he's defeated and Shang-Chi faces off with Fu Manchu in the final, he tells you, I have relied too much on artificial, on creations and devices, and too little on the natural order. So there has to be some type of science here to keeping Shaka Khan resurrected with this nutrient bath and something that's not so much natural. Which, I mean, I guess if you're going to build a bath tank, there's a lot of science involved. And I'm assuming a lot of the stuff that he uses is natural, but it makes me wonder if there's a little bit more to Shaka Khan than just magic or necromancy. Even though we do know that Fu Manchu does seem to have a little bit of magical power to him, I just wish there was a little bit more that was, you know, to him. But the thing is, he cannot be a completely living, like, skeleton that's raised from the dead, because he does feel pain. When Shang-Chi does cut off his arm, he does scream in pain. We don't see that there's any blood anytime he's cut off. The only thing we see is when Shang-Chi unmasks him, and he looks just like Shang-Chi. He's got the headband around his hair, but his face is rapidly deteriorating all the flesh and the tissue off of it. And literally in like 4 panels, like we see the de-evolution of it before he attacks Shang-Chi this final time. So what I'm assuming is these nutrient baths are kind of like, I guess... the way Skynet produces Terminators with synthetic skin and muscle and blood. And these nutrient baths basically form that around his muscle tissues. Which got me thinking something strange here. Is I was wondering if Fu Manchu was using basically the knowledge and the bone structure of Shaka Khan. Because, you know, he knows that he is such a badass warrior. But he was actually trying to clone Shang-Chi, and that's why he looks like Shang-Chi. Because here's the thing, if you ever watch anything that's like forensics and whatnot, they recreate people's facial structures based on their skeleton. And it gives you a pretty good idea of what a person looks like, you know, with, you know, flesh and bone. And everybody, that's unique to every living person in the world. Like, you know, you could reconstruct my facial features, and they would not like yours. Based on your look, when it's on your skull, it would look like your own. So it makes me wonder if this is more a clone of Shang-Chi than it is basically trying to resurrect one person. And because we do know that Fu Manchu, when Shang-Chi killed Dr. Petrie, Fu Manchu did say it was a clone he created. So we do know that he can clone, and that's what I'm kind of wondering. If this is some semi-resurrected skeleton with, you know, bathed in a cloning process. So it looks like Shang-Chi, and this is why Fu Manchu keeps referring to him as his new son. And that kind of gets us to the bigger part and, like, really important part of this story. And we kind of learned that there's this predicament and inner conflict within Fu Manchu. And this is just my opinion. And I'm very aware that Fu Manchu is a full-out villain. I mean, we know that he has tortured people, he's experimented on them, he enslaves people, so there's no doubt that he's a villain. But we do realize that he's a brilliant scientist, much like the modern scientist of Marvel and, you know, even those in the real world today. And the thing is, he realizes that the governments of the world are going to destroy the planet, and it'll take resetting the natural order for the world to survive. We've heard that from plenty of scientists these days, so that makes a lot of sense, and there's been a ton of movies about such a thing. And much like Doctor Doom, who I think is the greatest villain in Marvel, he's willing to do the dirty deed that needs to be done for the betterment of the world. The only catch is, much like Doctor Doom, he wants to rule that world. So, to some, he'll be seen as completely evil for it. It makes a ton of sense. He's going to kill millions of people to save the world. And to others, he'll be a savior. And this is a predicament that I completely love when it comes to fiction. Because just because you're right, and that's your opinion, doesn't mean that I'm wrong, because it's my opinion. It just depends on the sides of who you're on. I guess Nazi Germany during World War II and is a good example of that. Because obviously there was, you know, millions of Germans that thought Hitler was right and a completely other world that thought he was wrong. It's actually a pretty good comparison here with Fu Manchu being obsessed with China and whatnot. So a lot of this, not to get sidetracked, it all plays in to what Fu Manchu is telling Shang-Chi back in issue 27. And this is also covered in episode 16. That's why I've mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast. So this book is called Confrontation. It's excellent. This is where we're getting the divide between Philo Su and Fu Manchu. And both of them are pulling on Shang-Chi to join them. I'm going to go ahead and read this entire conversation. Fu Manchu says, "A path is a far cry from death, Shang-Chi. Besides, I do care, but on a grander scale. For my years of life and experience transcend the trivial, and nothing less than the world can interest me. I seek to change the world, to restore it to the glory of the past, to a time far better than today." And Shang-Chi counters, "How was the world bettered by forcing me to believe I had slain Dr. Petrie? It's a test of your loyalty, Shang-Chi, a test you failed upon hearing the first words from Smith's twisted mouth. You see, I would hope you would aid me in attaining my goals. Instead, you have adopted different goals, and in so doing so, you have erected between us the conflict of ideals. You think me cruel and yourself gentle, that I am evil and you are good, that I am the villain to your sanctimonious hero. But who are you to judge me? To judge anyone as evil? Does it enhance the rising and advancing of your spirit? Or has your spirit risen to such heights that you believe yourself to be God, capable of exercising celestial judgment on all those below you? There are many paths, Shang-Chi. Do not condemn me for following a path differently from yours. They all lead inequivocally to death, and all men are equally rewarded for their actions in life with the same death. Will your death be any better than mine? Before you answer, Shang-Chi, consider this. To me, you are evil. To me, you are the villain, and I am the hero." And it's the inner conflict and the predicament of Fu Manchu. And that's what I really like about a good villain. It's what makes Doctor Doom a good villain. This is what makes Magneto a good villain. This is what makes Sinestro a good villain. In their eyes, and the people that follow them, they are a hero. Like I said, this is what makes a good villain. There's a really good book that I own, and I picked this up when it came out probably better part of a decade ago, called The Monster's Corner. And it's an anthology of stories told through the eyes of monsters that think that they're actually in the right. For most of them, that's how they go. An excellent book. I recommend you pick it up. It's great. It's fantastic. It really touches a lot on this conversation. Now back to going on to this. Throughout the series, Fu Manchu has stated that he wants to bring back old China, but never really states why. He just, you know, they're better times. And maybe these old times were peaceful to him. We really don't know. We never see a lot of his past unless it involves his recent children, Philo Su or Shang-Chi. And maybe back then, for all we know, he's a completely different person. And I'm sure he wants to rule if, you know, his master plan goes off, because he doesn't want to see the world make the same mistakes that he is seeing, because we know that he is hundreds and hundreds of years old. Makes a ton of sense. Now, back to the issue at hand here at the end of issue 50. Fu Manchu is one, and he can achieve this dream. There's nothing stopping him. Shang-Chi is powerless, but instead of not launching these nukes, he leans over the control panel in hesitation, and he really seems that he doesn't want to do this. And this is where I think that Fu Manchu has realized that his immortality through all these centuries might have been a mistake. And I'm going to quote here in the book where he's kind of leaving over, because you can't see his face, and he's really shrouded in darkness. And Shang-Chi asks him, and he's got him at gun. He doesn't have the gun just yet. He says, "But why, my father? Why must you do this?" He says, "There's nothing else left to do. I have seen too many dreams, my son, spill over into waking life. Too many fantasies slain by conversion to reality. Too many hopes and needs perished in fulfillment. Now there is nothing left but this one final dream. And when I have made it also part of my waking life, then perhaps there will be no justification for my immortality. Still, it is a dream I cannot turn away from." And so, boom, Shang-Chi shoots him. So, like I said, there's some inner turmoil here with this villain, and it's, and I keep saying I really love Fu Manchu as a villain, and this just makes me love him anymore. So, and what this breaks down to is, you know, he's lived a long life and achieved everything, and there's nothing for him left, and he just wants to go back to an older, simple time. And when it breaks down to it, we as people, as we get older, as we have families and we watch our kids grow up and, you know, the world turns around us, we all want that blissful, simpler, youthful times. And that's just part of being human. And Fu Manchu really seems to be no different here. And a lot of this, and what I'm thinking of is, as I was reading this, is maybe Fu Manchu just wants to be a father to Shang-Chi that he never was. And he wants Shang-Chi to willingly go along with this plan for him. He does not want this resistance. And that's what any parent is want. They don't want any resistance as their children. They want that bond because they love them no matter what. And he even mentions, you know, that once he achieves his dream, immortality is nothing to him. He's willing to die an old man. And to me, just like any father, he wants to leave a legacy for his children. And that children are Shang-Chi, and he wants Shang-Chi to rule in his place. So let's jump back to issue 27. Fu Manchu, this is towards the end of the book. He says, "I can no longer speak to you as a father would speak to a son, Shang-Chi, for I cannot think of you as my son. I will confess something to you. Your betrayal has made me a very lonely man. The fact saddens me, and in my sadness lies the severity of your betrayal." It's like I said, he is heartbroken that what's happened to him, and that, and it makes a ton of sense, because outside of Ducharme, who, you know, Doug Minch really fooled us with in this story, everyone Fu Manchu has known has either died or they've turned on him. And we've seen a lot of this throughout Master of Kung Fu and the Four Giant Size issues. You know, his daughter Fallo Su has turned on him. High-ranking members of the C Fan, such as that he's trusted, such as Shadow Striker and Tiger Claw, they've all turned away or they've defected from him. And later in the issue, Shang-Chi confesses that he only wants to slay evil and not his father. So we know that this is the only thing that stops them, is this matter of opinion, and that's kind of the way the world works. If you're a podcaster, or if you have any type of social media, you know that's all social media usually is everybody's difference of opinion and everyone fighting back and forth. That's what makes us human. So, to further this idea here that Fu Manchu wanted Shang-Chi to be the one who stands at his side and usher in this new world, and I've already kind of covered this with Shaka Khan, is that he looks just like Shang-Chi. And this is the new son of Fu Manchu. So Tofu, if with Shaka Khan, he will remember everything that Shang-Chi did as a boy and looked up to him and loved him before he turned his back on him. And now with Shaka Khan, he is everything that Fu Manchu wanted Shang-Chi to be. He's loyal to the cause. And now that he has a son that looks just like his real son, that he can mold him into this child to rule China once they set off the nukes and turn the world back to the old ways. So, and like I said, look at the skull thing. If I was to reconstruct your facial features on your skull, you would look like you. You would not look like Shang-Chi. And that's what happens in this book. Shaka Khan would not look like Shang-Chi. That makes a lot of sense, that with Fu Manchu, he really wants Shang-Chi to rule with him. He doesn't want to do a lot of this, and he knows that if he does this, he has to kill his son, and he really doesn't want to. So, and to further a lot of this, at the end of 50, Fu Manchu is shocked when Shang-Chi shoots him, And this, like I said, you can go all the way back to 27. He feels betrayed, and he's lonely. And this was the only person that he wanted to join the world with him when he remade it. And he, and back then, like I mentioned, also, Shang-Chi expressed that he did not want to kill his father, just evil. And this implies that he wants his father to stop scheming. Any parent who loves their children would be shocked here when all this happens. Any child who loves their parent would want them to not do bad things and be a parent to them. This all makes sense that Fu Manchu really doesn't want to do this. I had literally believed, after reading all this stuff blindly, as I've mentioned, from issue 15 of Special Marvel Edition, Fu Manchu does not want to do this master plan. So the only thing left here is the question is if he is alive or dead at this point in the series. So the final thing to point out here in this story is, I mentioned in the last episode how Liko Wu has affected everybody since she's come on board in the story. Anywhere from Clive Reston to James Larner to how Blackjack Tar reacts to everybody to how she's affected Shang-Chi, and Shang-Chi's affected her. Well, not only has he affected her, we see at the end of 51 how he has affected everybody, because he speaks the truth. And everybody that's been through everything with him all the way up until issue, this changeover on issue 17, realizes that he's right. Shang-Chi has complained and he has preached so much to Smith that he's tired of all the senseless murdering. He will not kill like his agents do. You know, he wants a path of enlightenment through pacifism. The only thing is, he realizes that he is stuck trying to stop his father. And it's up to him. It's almost like he's destined to do so. And, well, we got the end of this story here where he actually has. And when he calls Smith out on everything and he tells him, you know, hey, you're everything that I oppose in this world. And I've come to realize that. But also, I also realize your intentions are noble with what you do. And, you know, therefore, I cannot oppose you, and I cannot, you know, be a friend to you. You know, you're nothing to me in the end. And that really seems to set with everybody on MI6, because this book could end no better with everybody leaving with him. And a lot of this has to do, they've actually been through a lot in a very short amount of time since the murder agency. And I really love it. It's a perfect ending to this book. And it leaves you with the only question, will they join back with Smith? And, you know, does Dr. Petrie regain his mind, I guess? So, yeah, like I said, It's a perfect ending, this book, and I absolutely love it, because it leaves the rest of these next 54 issues completely open, because all these characters, all of them seem to not be tied to MI6 anymore. Very curious to see how this turned out. So the final thing I want to bring up, and this is hilarious, I laughed when I read this, is when Fu Manchu's talking about everything. And he says, perhaps others have realized that the world's limitations cannot support man's boundless expansion and consumption, Shang-Chi, but I alone possess the courage and conviction. And then we move to the next panel. To take an action, that realization there's a nuclear explosion on the moon. To ensure that man and his world, in one way or another, and we see a tidal wave washing over New York City with a destroyed moon in the sky. Again, achieve mutual balance. And then what we see in a destroyed, almost like wasteland, is what appears to be a McDonald's. And I love it. It's so great. And I'll post this on social media, but like the ground is kind of like saturated. There's a trash can out front. We see the trees behind the building are completely bare. It's very cloudy sky. But you don't get the double arch, it's just an arch, much like the St. Louis Arch. The top of the lettering that you see is very construed, but it says 20 billion. So I'm going to assume that's 20 billion served. I thought that was funny because McDonald's is the end of this world because their food is completely terrible. But with that, I'm going to wrap up this episode of Deadly Podcast Kung Fu. You can follow the pod over on Twitter, Mastodon, at Deadly Kung Fu Pod. If you like our music, check out Rushing Tiger by Kuro over on SoundCloud. But remember, guys, support your favorite podcasts, support your local comic book shops, and keep reading comics, guys.